And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show. It is 4 minutes past 9 on this Tuesday, the 3rd of September. And it's great to have you on board for the programme. And it's another interesting mix of news, features, conversation. We want you involved throughout, of course, the 3 hours. And I'll just give you a rundown of the very familiar contact details for you now. But you never know, people tuning in all the time, or maybe today's the day there is a subject that you want to get your say out onto the airwaves about. 086 60 25,000, that's for WhatsApps or texts, and you can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number if that suits you. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. If you're outside the Republic, of course, 00353 749125,000. And if you want to email the show, comments at highlandradio.com. You have the option to watch as well if that suits your lifestyle. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. That means you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're on the X platform and across Facebook. Just search us out there. We are there. And again, just to recap, a big thank you to all of you who so generously donated for our little adventure yesterday that we had. It was in Ard's Forest, around Ard's Friary, along the coast. Absolutely beautiful scenery that we have here. And as I was saying to Lee there earlier, the weather was fantastic. The spirit and the mood was really fantastic as well. And best of luck to all of those taking part in the Donegal Camino as they take on Mount Errigal. Later on today, I think they're going up or the beginning of their ascent at 10. But they're such a lovely bunch of people and so friendly and welcoming. And they're doing amazing stuff for a great cause. They've already raised almost €75,000 towards Cancer Care West, the West of Ireland cancer charity. And thanks to your generosity through this show, we're going to be throwing $5,000 at least into that as well, which is fantastic, isn't it? It's lovely for all of us, I think. As I say, if you want to get involved in that, it's still not too late. You can give us a ring here at the station or go on to donate.ie/ Greg Hughes. But as I say, thank you so very much for getting us over that five. It was a wonderful milestone to achieve. And best of luck to all of the crew as they continue their Camino walk. Right. Let us look at the newspapers as we head towards our first guest. Coalition and Sinn Féin clash over party's new housing proposal. Sinn Féin and the government clashed sharply yesterday over the main opposition party's new housing plan as the issue looks set to dominate political exchanges this autumn. Sinn Féin intends to use the plan to reignite its criticism of the government as a general election draws closer, with senior figures hopeful it can restore dwindling polling momentum and swing crucial undecided voters in its direction. Now, the truth be told, Sinn Féin were at the heady heights of something like 37% in the polls. They're down to 17 or 18 in the most recent poll. Support for Mary Lou McDonald has also dwindled significantly. For me, personally, just as an observer, I think I can see why that has happened. Is this housing plan going to be enough to reverse and address that? I'm not really sure about that. But anyway, the launch sparked conflict between the opposition and the government. As Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin said, the plan would make a coalition with Sinn Féin impossible, which is really quite an interesting proposition, because both parties would need each other to go into government. Sinn Féin, obviously, particularly because Fine Gael simply won't do business with them. Fianna Fáil, obviously, they would have the Fine Gael option. Taoiseach Simon Harris dismissed a key part of the plan as a Frankenstein solution. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald described it as the most ambitious public housing programme in the history of the state. The party says it would deliver, on average, 60,000 homes annually over 5 years. It would overhaul the Land Development Agency, wind down or axe government schemes aimed at first-time buyers, and introduce a new affordable housing plan. So the schemes that are in there at the moment, they would be gone. We're going to talk to Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty on the programme in this first hour and put some of those questions to him, and maybe he'll explain more and more as to how it might actually work. The Independent tells us that a quarter of children have been bullied online at primary school age, with girls more likely to be victimised, according to a startling new report. The figure rises as high as 38% for children aged 12 to 14, according to Cyber Safe Kids' annual trends and usage report. So, I mean, being a young un is tough enough, and it's particularly tough in this day and age. But if you're getting abuse online or you're getting bullied at school, it makes life very, very difficult. And it does affect you into your adulthood. I've spoke to enough people and have personal knowledge to know that that's the case. A quarter of children are being bullied at the moment. The report is titled Left to Their Own Devices, in reference to the increasing amount of time children are spending alone on the internet, social media and online gaming. It warns 65% of 8 to 12-year-olds have been contacted by a stranger while playing a game online. I'll just read that to you one more time, because imagine if this were a shopping centre and your child came over to you or came home to you. She was 9 or 10 or he was 9 or 10 and they said, "Mom, Dad, a stranger approached me in the shopping centre." You would be up to high dough. It would be on Facebook, warning other parents, and the whole community would be all worried about it. I don't see a great difference between an online approach and a physical approach. I mean, obviously, the physical approach presents, you know, more immediate danger. But 65%, more than 6 out of 10 of 8 to 12-year-olds have been contacted by a stranger while playing a game online. Meanwhile, a quarter of children this age told researchers that experienced cyberbullying. 28% of girls, 22% of boys had suffered bullying online. The report noted that despite the sharp focus on smartphones in schools, it's more common than ever for an 11-year-old to own a smartphone. And we as parents justify it, don't we? But it's obviously problematic. The Irish Daily Mail. The Department of Education has come under pressure to drop a junior cycle textbook containing what's been described as absurdly misconceived and discriminatory depictions of an Irish family from the school curriculum. Now, this is one of those that you have to see it to believe it. To the extent whereby I want to see the book. Do you know that sort of a way? We're literally trying to track down the book because I want to hold it and see it with my own eyes, because there's an awful lot of images circulating on social media. They're the same images that are being circulated over and over. I'm not saying this information is not in this book, but I just want to see it and I want to hold the book myself. The Health and Wellbeing book is part of the Social, Personal and Health Education SPHE curriculum and is taught to children between first and third year. Now, what's crucial about this, from my perspective and as a parent, and many of you listening are parents, I can't get access to this book online. I've tried, we've tried. I would like to see what's being taught to our children. That information should be available online for us to see in advance, because how can we be angry or happy or sad if we can't access this information ourselves? This book is not available. The only information available to parents that I can see, and I'm more than happy to be corrected, is sort of general guidance to teachers as to how they approach certain subjects. Politicians across the spectrum have criticised the depiction of family under a section entitled All Different, All Equal, which contrasts a traditional Irish family with another from a mixed background. Now, as I say, this is where, well, I'll describe the pictures, okay, and then I'll describe the pictures, and then from there we can read what the paper is saying. So, the Irish family is four people. The two kids, well, Dad's got a big ginger beard, big ginger hair. Mom's got a big ginger fluff of hair, and she's wearing an apron by the looks of it, because she's wearing an apron because she can see the bottom of her jeans from under it. They're standing in front of an old thatched cottage that probably doesn't appear to have running water or electricity. That's the kind of age it looks depicted. There's a cow looking on with an expression of disdain. This is the truth, right? And there's two kids in the background, also with red hair, Irish dancing among chickens. And behind them, there's a hurley at the front door and a schlitter in the front yard. And it looks ara bigara, you know, and it just looks like nothing like I recognise about Ireland. Contrasting that, there's a mixed race family, and they are taking selfies. They're dressed in all fancy gear. They're standing in front of what do you call those things in Italy? The Colosseum. Yes, they're standing in front of a Colosseum, traveling the world, happy, waving flags, eating pizza, taking selfies. So that's how the mixed families look described, and the Irish family is they're all in Aran jumpers with red hair and Irish dancing among the chickens. Well, the Irish family, I'll see what the paper sees it as now. The Irish family depicted outside a thatched cottage and all wearing iron jumpers eat potatoes, bacon and cabbage every day. This is in the text. The eat potatoes, bacon and cabbage every day, do not like change or difference, and the children get told off if we mix with people with a different different religion from ours, as they would be a bad influence. So as well as the picture I described, this is how the family is described in the book. Outside of that cottage, we eat potatoes, bacon and cabbage every day. We do not like change or difference, and the children get told off if we mix with people with a different religion from ours, as they would be a bad influence on us. Now, I've never... That is not the type of Irish family I know or am part of. But anyway, in contrast, the mixed-race family, who may also well be Irish, by the way, they love change and difference. They eat curry, they eat pizza and Asian food, and they spend their time travelling internationally and visiting art galleries. As school returned last week, Independent TD Karen Nolan said she was contacted by dozens of parents seeking to have the offending material immediately removed from classrooms. The Lee Shoffley deputy said, "At first I thought this was some kind of a parody, but astonishingly this is not the case." So what do you think about that? 08660 25000. It's not it's like when I first saw it, I didn't believe it, and I had to look at it myself. But there you have it. That's how the Irish family is depicted versus an Irish mixed family. Enoch Burke, he's back in jail for a third time for breaching a court order to stay away from a school that he was sacked from last year. Mr. Burke has been showing up each day at Wilson Hospital School in Multifarnham. That's right, Multifarnham, County Westmeath, since it opened its doors for the new school term late last month. Now, this guy doesn't have any headphones or anything, and he must have incredible the ability to just stand there, not listening to music, not doing anything, just stand there. But anyway, he was arrested by Gardaí yesterday after a judge ordered that Mr. Burke must appear before the High Court for breaching an injunction to stay away from the school. He's now been committed again to Mountjoy Prison, where he's already spent over 400 days until he purges his contempt. Mr. Burke was initially suspended from school in summer 22 following his reaction to being asked to call a transgender student by a new name and pronouns they, which he said was against his religious beliefs. He was subsequently sacked from the school in January 23, but he has appealed the dismissal and remains on full pay pending the hearing of an appeal. Speaking to the paper at the school last month, he said he would continue to turn up there as this is where I work. However, he also admitted that he hated his time locked up in Mountjoy. But he's back there again and again. Just to be clear, he might have his religious beliefs and he might have his disputes with the school, but the reason he's in jail, and the only reason he's in jail at this point, and we can talk about what led to this point, is that he keeps turning up at the school to go to school with his school bag and his tie and his jacket and all that kind of stuff. He's sacked from the school, but he still wants to go there. That is the actual reason why he's in jail. But obviously the background as to how he ended up in court in the first place does involve his views on transgenderism. Apparently, we're moving away from electric cars. The electric vehicle market in Ireland is in need of a jump start, car chiefs have warned. The Society of Irish Motor Industry is calling for support in Budget 25 as stats reveal total new car registrations for August were down 8%. Last month, 1,259 new electric cars were registered, 29% lower than 23. And so far this year, 15,000-odd new EVs have been registered. That's a quarter of a drop, a 25% drop compared to the same period in 23 when 266 of the greener motors were snapped up. Greener at the exhaust, I think it's an important clarification. I'm not saying they're not overall greener, but they're carbon neutral at the exhaust. I don't know how they're going to reverse that. Maybe more incentives is the way, but I still believe a proper charging network is going to be key. Ireland is unlikely to pursue the UK government's proposal to ban smoking in outdoor pubs and restaurants. Would you be in favour of this, a ban on smoking in outdoor spaces? Tánaiste Micheál Martin, who introduced the workplace smoking ban in 2004, is not in favour of the plan, a spokesperson confirmed. Last week, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer said he would back proposals to ban smoking in outdoor hospitality areas, stadiums, children's parks and areas near hospitals and universities. So no smoking, no vaping, presumably in and around a football stadium, in and around a pub, in and around, you know, your park where children are, around hospitals and universities as well. In 2004, we became the first country to ban smoking indoors. And it was, in fairness to Micheál Martin, it was he that introduced it. Keir Starmer's had a lot of resistance to his proposals. People think it's a bit of an overreach. But what do you think? 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number here on the 9 till noon show. Hey, welcome back to the programme. Really pleased to welcome on to it Sinn Féin's spokesperson on finance, Donegal Deputy Piers Doherty. Good morning to you, Piers. Morning. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mayan. Greg.
I do appreciate it. Okay, so this is... I suppose this is the big one, isn't it, that I suppose people have been waiting to see for quite some time. It's your party's plan to make housing affordable and to bring home ownership back into reach for working people. So I suppose, how do you see this, or how does your party see this happening?
Yeah, well, look, I think everybody knows across the state the disaster that housing is. You know, whether it's people that are waiting for social housing, council housing, those that are paying extortionate rents, and we've seen rents, you know, go through the roof even over the last 4 years of this government. House prices are going up about 10%, about average house prices are going up to about €25,000 per year. You know, and as I said yesterday, like I've got young children, as many of your listeners will as well. Like, and I genuinely fear, I've an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old at home, and I fear what will happen if we have a continuation of this government, because house prices going where they are, like how many young people have the opportunity to own their own home? And we have horrible statistics, like the average age now of somebody owning their own home is 39 years of age. And just think about that. Like, a lot of people delay starting a family until they have a home, and all of the issues that causes. So our plan is a radically different approach to the government's failures. It's about putting significant amount of our resources, our investment into housing. It's delivering 300,000 homes over the next 5 years. It's the biggest scale and the biggest ambition that any political party has ever shown in the history of the state. It delivers 125,000 social, affordable, state-provided homes. And on top of that, it facilitates the delivery of 175,000 private homes. Some of those will be self-builds and all that, which are particularly important for the likes of Donegal. For renters, it freezes rents for the next 3 years and puts a month's rent back into your pocket. For people who want affordable housing, who maybe earn too much to get a council house, but don't have the type of money that allows you to buy the prices that are in the market at the minute, we have a scheme that allows house prices to be reduced by anything from €150,000 down, and that's through the state actually providing for the land and which the house is built on.
So how does that look like then? And Donegal County Council would be responsible to a great extent in delivering this in Donegal. So locally, how many houses might be delivered here? How do we not know that a lot of this... these properties might be delivered down the country, you know, because we are speaking in the Northwest here. So from day one, what starts happening from a Donegal perspective?
So from day one there, and that's the key with this plan. This isn't a plan which takes a couple of years to think about and all the rest. The work is done. So we start delivering from day one. So we make the money available. And look, in the next government, I make no bones about it, I want to be the Minister for Finance, which releases the funds to end the housing crisis. So from day one, there's an assessment of needs in relation to all of the counties. So it's about what type of housing that we need in Donegal as part of this plan. Once those type of homes are approved, like at the minute, if you want a council house, you have to go through about 15 different steps, stages. We're cutting a lot of that out. That's a lot of the problem, Greg. It's red tape and all the rest. So once your housing need is identified and it's approved by the department, that's what you already approved from stage one, so you can go to planning permission. So part of that will be looking at what is the need in terms of the county, in terms of social housing, but also affordable housing. So in year one, we plan to deliver 4,000 affordable houses. Now, just put that in context. In any given year, the amount of homes that come on the private market for sale for individuals, because remember, it's the vulture funds that buy most of these homes, but for individuals, it's about between €8,000 and €9,000. So see all the sound bites from Simon Harris and all the spin from government. When you actually deal with the fact, the number of private homes coming onto the market is actually stagnated over the last 5 years. They haven't increased. The number of homes that are being built is increasing, but it's not first-hand.
It's about who buys them. It's about whether it's individuals or housing bodies or investors.
So what we don't want is, and this is the different, massive different approach from government, if you look at what's happening in the major cities at the moment, which most of the construction has taken place, like I think it's about 90% of all homes in Dublin City are bought by institutional investors. They're not bought, they're not for sale. They're all apartments. Only 5% of apartments come onto sale to the general public. We want to stop that. Ireland is not for sale. We're not going to do what Fine Gael has done, which is allow the institutional investors to come in here to buy up these properties and rent them out at extortionate eye-watering prices and then pay no tax on the rent that they get. That day is over under Sinn Féin. And that's the beauty about this here. People are going to have a real, real choice in terms of whether they want to continue with a system that in every single indicator, like, you know, the cost of student accommodation, like the cost of student accommodation in Donegal is eye-watering, never mind Dublin and Galway. And many people, you know, and I'm sure they're coming on to your show, Greg, they're talking about that they've got places in Galway, places in Dublin. They're not sure if they're going to be able to take up those places because they can't find accommodation.
As you rightly referenced there, the majority of house building at the moment is going on in more urban areas. But, you know, people listening to us today, the amount of young families, single mothers that are getting letters through their door from landlords saying, you know, we're putting the rent up, we need you out because my son's taking the home or whatever it might be. It's huge. I get contacts from well over a dozen at this point, so I'm sure you could multiply that by a factor. Again, it's about how will houses be delivered here in County Donegal?
So let me deal with two points in that there. First of all, the evictions. People, what's called no-fault evictions. So see somebody who's acting the maggot, somebody who's involved in antisocial behaviour, not paying their rent and all the rest, they should be evicted after, you know, the process should take place. No landlord should be having to tolerate that if somebody is in that type of vein. What we're talking about here is in the main is, and what you've suggested is people who are paying the rent, who are good tenants, who haven't done anything wrong and are getting evicted. And we've got serious amount of people in that situation. And the problem is they've nowhere to go. These are families that are becoming homeless in the next number of weeks. We're an outlier here, Greg, and I don't expect your listeners to know this because we're just busy getting on with our own life. Across Europe, you're not allowed to evict people in what's called no-fault eviction if they haven't done anything wrong. Britain and Ireland are the only two countries, I think, in Europe that actually allows this to happen. And what's Labour Party doing in Britain? They're going to actually ban the practice. So as part of this plan, we are going to ban no-fault evictions as well, so that landlords will not be able to throw you out of their home if you have done nothing wrong. And we need a proper rental sector. It works in other countries. It works in Spain, France, Germany, Italy. It works everywhere else. Why can't it work here? And that's the difference of approach. It's about us making sure that we're on the side of tenants.
So just in relation to that, what then is to stop landlords? And a lot of landlords in this part of the county aren't international investors or whatever it might be. They'll just go, you know what, you froze my rent. I can't evict someone out of my own property if I want to. I'm just going to sell up. So we lose the rental capacity. We already have a very small amount that people could sort of shop around within. So just in this one area alone, Pierce, there's a lot of landlords just ready to pull the trigger anyway. They'll say, stuff this. You know, I'm going to go short-term let before Sinn Féin get into power.
Well, first of all, a couple of points there. First of all, under our proposals, landlords will still be able to evict people if there is reasons for evictions. If they will still be able to sell their property, but they'll have to sell their property like every other country with the tenant in it. You can't evict to sell the property. So they're able to still dispose of the property as they wish. Many of the landlords are selling up because they are getting prices for their homes that they've never seen before. Like, we are at peak prices here. This is just runaway stuff. Like, you know, I put this to the Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, yesterday on the radio. 25,000 euro house prices increase next year. If they get another 5 years on the trajectory, house prices will go up another 125,000 euro. Like, where does this end? Where does the madness end? And this is why landlords are selling up, because they're getting these type of.
So part of this plan then is to flatten the market.
Absolutely. Like, you know, when I argue with government about bringing in a rent freeze, they say that's wrong. Why? because they want rent. They believe that rents should continue.
But freezing rents at €1,900 in Buncrana, I mean, it's the horse is bolted and the gate's being closed.
It absolutely, and that's why we need to put a month's rent back into renters' pockets. And what we want, and we make no bones about this here, we want rents to go down. We want rents to go down. And how are we going to do that? We're going to deliver a cost rental scheme which will allow for people to rent, including in the likes of our cities, for prices below €1,000. And we're going to do that through long-term finances, and we've outlined it in our document. Our document is over 109 pages long or something like that there, with minute detail in terms of how we're actually going to
So how do we deliver, just back to it, and I think this, I'm not saying you're avoiding the question, but it's the third time getting at it. How do we deliver houses in Donegal? What's the council going to do to deliver houses? Because one of the biggest problems to development in this county at the moment is our crappy infrastructure in terms of, you know, problems getting access onto certain roads, sewerage, access to public water. These are a lot of the barriers to development in this county as it is. So what does your plan do to address the infrastructure to facilitate this building work?
Well, that's the key about it, because it's not just in terms of those council houses, but it's also in terms of private houses. And when we meet with developers, when we meet builders, and we met with serious local authorities as well, they're the issues that they want unlocked. And all of that is contained within our plan. So, for example, far faster decisions in terms of planning laid down in statutory law, which means, you know, legal timeframes in relation to decisions, both at council level and at a board planning level. Additional money and investment for infrastructure delivery, so like the likes of Irish Water, to make sure that we have the water to connect. Master plans in areas so that there's a joined up approach in relation to this. You don't have to go to a 15 stage process to get approval for a council house. We reduce it to 4 steps to make sure that actually there's a speedy up process. I have a council development, it's about to go ahead, it'll break ground hopefully next month here in Gidor, 29 houses. That's been stalled for years. Much of the reasons why that has been stalled is some of it's to do with Irish Water, some of it's to do with the department, some of it's to do with inflation, and then when the prices go up, you have to go right back to the start again. And it is just madness in the middle of a housing crisis when in this same parish, I'm dealing with cases at the minute where I don't know if a number of families are going to be homeless by the time the month's out or not. And that's, you know, that's, so we're going to cut through all of this stuff. We also are going to introduce emergency planning powers, which allows for infill, 1,000 houses in infill gardens. So this would be like estates and stuff like that there, which have houses already, and there might be a place where you can get an additional house in. And this would be particularly housing for our over 55s. And we're going to use emergency planning powers to actually allow for those houses to be.
What about people in that built up area, that sounds like a housing estate area? Will they have the ability to object to that, the residents of that space?
First of all, you're talking about an infill position. So these would be in a situation where you have like a council house in the estate, and that there is a kind of space there for an additional house. So you'd be using emergency planning powers.
Locals wouldn't have a right to object to that in that housing estate?
There would be a consultation, but not the same. You're not going to say it through the same process in relation to that. And you're talking about a single house in this scenario, and it would be designated for.
I know, but it's obviously significant enough that it forms part of this plan, so it's not insignificant.
What we're doing in this here, Greg, is we're going to try to end homelessness on the over 55s within 1 year. Now, you don't need 1,000 of these homes to actually end homelessness for over 55s, but what some people who are over the age of 55 and council houses want is they want to move to a more size-appropriate house. So they want to move from maybe a 3-bedroom, which they had when they were raising a family, to a smaller house. And by doing that, you're making available.
So how do you compel or encourage, or whatever their phraseology is, Irish Water to get the infrastructure into areas that it's required in? Because currently at the moment, much of our work on this programme is trying to get them to actually get water to places where people already live. And this is going to be a very important part of actual housing delivery. So how do you compel Irish Water to say, right, the infrastructure in Buncrana is such that we can't provide these 40 houses? You know, what are you going to, you know, what's the time frame for getting Irish Water? Like, I just don't see how that works. So I'm pleased for the education.
It's an excellent question. So this is the difference here. The difference is no party has a plan bar Sinn Féin now, that looks beyond today, tomorrow, the next year at the most. And so therefore, Irish Water has no idea what is going to happen on Buncrana in the next 3, 4, 5 years. They have no idea. So they don't know where they have to prioritise the infrastructure. That's the difference about this plan. This is a 5-year plan. This is a term of government plan, which starts on day one, but ramps up housing delivery over the years, and therefore looks at a joined up approach in relation to the council identifying the need, where we're going to build, and therefore the infrastructure flows from it through the connection between planning, infrastructure delivery, the department itself, and a whole of government response. But it's not just in relation to, like, there's many areas that are serviced. Let's be clear about this here, you know, and so it's not all just Irish Water. There's a lot of land hoarding going on as well, remember. There's people who aren't developing land that needs to be developed land. We start from this point, and the point is that if we get the opportunity to be in government, if I'm Minister for Finance, there is absolutely no way we're going to allow for this.
So say, for instance, just using Buncrana for an example, say, for instance, there is a patch of land, and this has already been identified, right, that is ripe for envelopment and development, but it's a farmer's land or it's in private ownership, right? But it is there just right on the edge of Buncrana and could provide 40, 50, 60 houses. Are you saying that your party will compel that landowner, because at the moment they're sort of being taxed into encouraging, well, not quite there yet, but the plan is to tax them into to freeing it up, right? Are you saying that your party would compel that landowner or that farmer to make that property available for public housing?
No, not necessarily public housing.
Or private housing.
It can be any type of housing. So two parts of that. First of all, you mentioned farmers. We led the charge in relation to this year, where the government brought forward their tax on service site lands. We said there's an issue in terms of farmers. Actually, the example that we gave, it's interesting, over and over again in terms of questions, was a farmer from Inishowen in the Dáil. And Pascal Donoghue says, nothing to see here. When ministers changed, Michael McGrath again wouldn't listen to us. Okay. We asked, we put forward an amendment.
So if it's not farmers' land, just say it's someone's land.
Let me take it. So whether it's Buncrana, whether it's in Galway, or whether it's in Dublin at the M50, which most of this big land is in the first instance, if you're sitting on serviced land and you're not developing it for housing, then yes, you not only will you be taxed, but the tax will increase year on year. Mm. The point I was making earlier on is this here. We either recognise that we're in an emergency or not. And I believe that we're absolutely in an emergency. It is absolutely crucifying when you have a family sitting across you. I have three families at the minute. Let me tell you this here, because this could be anybody. This could be, these are people who are working, who have raising kids. One of the children went to school recently, doesn't even know of the situation. These are families from this area, who've lived in this area, and who could be homeless in the next number of weeks. I am not standing over this here. This plan can sort this out.
I get you, but a lot of it is to me, it sounds like, a lot of faith in Irish Water that many people don't have, Ishgairn, or whatever people want to call it. Potentially, you know, putting extra properties in built-up areas that maybe the locals may not want, and maybe an overreach into people's private property to tax and effectively compel them to free it up for housing. It sounds, you know, it's quite, I don't know, is the word authoritarian? I don't know. It sounds like, you know, powerful stuff. That the delivery of this is going to, a lot of feet are going to be trampled on. As you say, we're in an emergency, and maybe the general population believe that's justifiable. But there's a big reach in here into people's private property in terms of what they do with it for rental, people's private land in terms of wanting it for development, and, you know, any gaps in some housing, let's stick a house in there and we'll consult you, but we need that house to relieve homelessness amongst the over 55s. It's tough stuff.
First of all, I think some of that is not a fair representation.
Well, that's why you're here. You can say whatever I got wrong, of course.
And you give me that opportunity to do that. But this does require serious measures. So the biggest step here is for this one. 39 billion euro is going to be made available to actually deliver these homes. The government have a different view. The government's view is that this money, these surpluses that we're making, billions of euro every year, should be locked away for 20 years. We're saying no, the emergency's here, right now. We're going to use that money now. The second thing is, the major problem here isn't just about somebody with a piece of land and the edge of Buncrannock, which won't come into play in the main scheme of things. The main problem here is serious landowners are serious hoarders in relation to land that are speculating and looking at these prices going up. We had an approved housing body, right?
These are and I think, too, just to be clear on that, there are people that got in very early, very influential, powerful people getting exemptions in terms of the land tax. I presume you're somewhat referencing that as well. It's almost as if they were forewarned because they were able to get in, sort of get exemptions on some of this land that was being taxed.
So yeah, and like, look, the problem here, like as I was saying, these kind of social housing bodies who are looking to build council houses and want to buy land and all that, they told the government like 5 years ago that these big landowners, massive landowners, are just sitting on the land because it's more profitable for them to look at the price of that land increasing every year. So as I said, like house prices have increased in Dublin by 10%, 8% in the rest of the country over the last year under Fine Gael. So speculation is massive. Mm. It is like there is huge profiteering in this here. And who's paying the price for it? It's the parents that have to pay for the student accommodation. It's the kids who don't have a future here and are now in Australia. It is the 4,000 children plus that are in emergency accommodation, 14,000 people. It is people who don't feel that they have a future. Mm. That has to stop. So the main part of it here, Greg, is we have about 90,000 planning permissions across the state. Like, it's not about taking land from somebody or for it. The main thing is activating.
Okay, getting them through. Who's building these houses? Because at the moment, I think you referenced a development in your part of the world whereby, and we've seen it elsewhere, private contractors in dispute with the council. There had been some an agreement to build these houses, but prices and there's inflation and then they back and forward. And I've spoken to on the air and had communications off the air with, you know, private developers who are saying, stop this. You know, we can go into the north, and if you drive through the north, you do see a lot of houses being built, it would seem. We can go into the north. We don't have to quabble or argue with the council. They'll pay us, you know, what the property is worth at the time it's completed. You know, you will need to be working with these people to deliver these houses. So how will you ensure that this money that they have to invest or the resources they have to invest will be done in Donegal, for an example, but obviously you want to broaden it out to a national?
Well, the first thing is, the state also has to get good value for money. And the best way of getting good value for money is actually making sure that the house is delivered in a timely fashion. So when we have a situation where a developer is looking at building council houses and it's taken 5 years later, then the prices are all changed. Look, we've had a situation during the crisis here, during the inflation crisis, where developers are saying the prices have dramatically changed. We need to look at it. The whole process has to go back to the very, very start, to the approval of the project. Like, it is just nonsense. And it delays the whole thing and it puts up the cost further. There are developers here or builders here in Donegal, not far from me, who have been for the last number of years wanting to build social housing in an area where we need massive social housing, but because of red tape, they can't get approval. What does that mean? It means that the council have already approved some other land, and until that land is developed, which is not going to be developed, then they can't allow this developer to develop the houses that is needed. We have met with developers, big and small, builders big and small, in approved housing bodies. Some of them have told us, Greg, that they've had to lay people off. That they've had to lay people off during a housing emergency crisis. Why? Because they don't have the pipeline or certainty of projects. So, absolutely, the key thing that people
so need speeding the process up limits the inflation from planning to completion. But there are other things too. There, like Help to Buy, the vacant property grant. We have the biggest uptake in the country of it here. First home scheme. You're going to unwind all of those, are you not? Is that the plan? That's what the government claim you're going to do.
Yeah, look, great sound bites coming from the government because they've got nothing else to offer in terms of housing. So let's take the vacancy, for example. So we've actually argued that the vacant property grant needs to be changed, and what we need to do is give upfront payments, because many of the people who actually who are applying for this, who want to do up a vacant home, the problem that they have is that they can't get the cash to do it. It's fine being able to get €70,000, but where do you get the money to do that plus the house in the meantime?
So you'll keep that one going.
We want stage payments in relation to the Help to Buy.
Just in relation to that vacant property grant, are you including in this? Because for me, it's a no-brainer that and it would be really good for urban Ireland. So say, for instance, there was a three-storey building in Letterkenny that someone could draw that grant down three times to deliver three units of accommodation. You know, would that not be a positive move that would help in that sort of environment deliver more accommodation?
No, because first of all, like, if you're in a business and you, so there in that scenario, you're probably talking about rents, you know, renting out as a business. Like, you're a business, you're a landowner, you're not a single landowner, you're not an accidental landowner in relation to that. Most of that work that you're doing in your property can be offset in relation to your taxable income. Greg, you know, under Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, half the landlords in the country pay no tax whatsoever. None whatsoever. Like, this is, most people don't see this stuff because it happens in the finance, but the government gave the landlords another 160 million euro of tax breaks last year. The department's official, I have the correspondence, not one person in the department supported this. They were all saying that this will mean more landlords will pay no tax whatsoever. Like, so, like, there are ways where if you're a business, you can offset.
I get you. Okay, I understand. Just in terms of this delivery, right, for a lot of people, we can't afford pensions. We can't afford life insurance. We can't afford, health insurance and stuff. And really what we see as our investment or anything that we might have to lean back on is, you know, the 3 or 4 bedroom bungalow that we paid up for our entire life. And you look at it now and you say, right, if I wanted to sell that to sort of get some cash together, it might be worth, you know, 280 or something like that, right? Does your plan not drive that, the cost or the value of all of that stuff down? Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, if rents are stuck at 1,000 and houses are being delivered, you know, at 250,000, does that not drag the entire value of people's property down with it?
Well, first of all, what you're trying to do is you're trying to actually reduce the cost of new building. So the main thing that you're trying to do actually, because you can't force the builders to build something at a loss. So what you're trying to do is actually take away the costs in relation to it. So the land hoarding becomes a thing of the past, which means land becomes cheaper for the builders to actually build on. You start taking away some of the pressures in terms of the concrete tax levy and in terms of other costs. The time, the cost and saving in time and all of that. So you actually make it cheaper for them to actually build in the first place. And you're talking about driving down house prices in terms of the cost of house prices. Greg, we're very clear in this here. The government, again, and this is the beauty about politics because there's choice, government want house prices to go up. We're saying house prices need to come down. House prices in the private sector will only come down to what is affordable. They won't come down less than what it costs to actually build them. So what we're doing in this plan is about trying to remove the obstacles that builders have in relation to the costs that make up house building. But for a portion of the population, we recognise that there's three different categories of housing. One, people want a private home. They'll be able to afford a private home and we want to try and make that more affordable for them. Two, people will rely on council housing because they have no means to actually have other housing. And then there's a gap in the middle where people are earning too much for council housing but can't afford the houses on the market. And that's why we're intervening.
Yeah, but two nurses, their combined income doesn't qualify them, though, for that affordable sort of midsection.
It absolutely does. And Darragh O'Brien has been spouting nonsense in relation to this here. And it just shows you how out of touch and desperate they are. A nurse's salary, starting salary, is €35,000, Greg. Two nurses is €70,000. They well easily qualify for this here. See, the problem with Darragh O'Brien is, if you're under Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, the average age you are, according to the Central Statistic Office, when you purchase your first home is 39 years of age. It's a disgrace. It's a disaster. Home ownership has fallen under this government. We're not going to tolerate that. We want young people to be able to purchase their own home again, not when they're at 0.10 in the nursing scale where they might be earning a bit more. We want people who are in their late 20s to be able to, early 30s, to be able to buy their first home again. And therefore, absolutely, your nurse, your guard and all that, your teacher will be able to afford these houses. These houses, and obviously defective block plays a big part in terms of our scheme as well in relation to our commitment of an end-to-end
just one thing about confuses me about that is that, you know, you want to back homeowners, and most people up here would certainly agree, and you would concede that I think that the cap needs to be increased and people need absolutely 100% redress, and you're talking about delivering houses for what, 250 to what, 319, or what's the actual average delivery price? I mean, obviously some of them will be delivered at half price, but what is the average delivery cost of a property?
So you can take a property because these properties aren't just, you know, your average properties. These are social homes. So they're a certain size and scale. So the average cost of delivering a council house across the state is €327,000 euro. That's the department.
Yeah. So that's much less than the cap for that's much less than the cap for defective concrete. So why can't you deliver the reparation or the repair or you know, I think really the majority of these houses are going to have to be replaced. Why can't you sort of do you feel that you'll be able to deliver those houses at the same kind of a cost?
So two parts to that there. The size of a social home compared to the size of an average home in the state, not just Donegal, but is very different. Okay, so just the square foot cost would be probably maybe the same. There's also a cost in relation to demolition, which has to be factored in. But look, the point is really well. So our scheme is completely different from the government. We're stopping that nightmare. You can see Paddy Diver, who's building his home at the minute, and he's got videos up, and Paddy's got experience in terms of construction. He's managing his own product. Like, God help if that was my mother or somebody else. They wouldn't have a clue what to do. No harm to me, mum. She's brilliant. You know, but like, it's not fair. So our scheme, it does what the pirate scheme did, is the state comes in, builds the house from start to finish, manage the product. And we do it at scale. We do it not by one individual tendering a price and going to a contractor. We do it in scale. In
to terms deliver, of, presumably then, to deliver better value for money for to the taxpayer.
The costs as well.
Okay.
But more important, it actually provides the 100%, because you don't have to put your hand in your pocket to get your house rebuilt. And it also provides value for money. And it also takes that pressure off people in terms of, will I be able to actually manage this project? Or, you know, when a builder tells me, do I need this or not? Not.
Well, there's a lot of people not going near it because they can't take that on if the truth is told. All right. Listen, thanks for so much of your time this morning. Deputy Piers Doherty, thank you. He is Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson. Okay, the weather forecast for today, I can tell you that. Where is it? It is, it'll be cloudy today with scattered showers of rain or drizzle and occasional sunny intervals. The best of the sunshine likely this evening. Temperatures 15 to 17 degrees. But hold your horses, because as we head towards the weekend, the temperature is going to rise. We're going to get nicer weather. So it should be actually really quite pleasant here for the weekend. So looking forward to that. And also looking forward to Friday morning, by the way. We are broadcasting live from Angrianon Theatre for Irish Music Month. We've got four fabulous acts performing three songs each. We're going to have Jimmy and Paul there. We're going to be having a draw for €10,000. And you can go and be in the audience if you wish. Listen, we're not expecting to fill the place out. We don't even know how many people might choose to turn up, but we're in the theatre, so we thought we'll give you the option. Go to Angrianon's website, book your tickets for free, and you can come along and at the very least see a live broadcast in action, but also see some cracking live music as well. So that's a show live from Angrianon this Saturday morning from 9. You can get free tickets right now at Angrianon Theatre. Go to their website and book the tickets. It'd be great to see you there. What does it say? You know, it... That's a by-the-by. We're going to be doing a great radio show. But hey, if you can be there, why not be there? Go to Angrianon, book your tickets. Back after the news and obituary notices.